leadership for these types of mental health responders, that it's at the same level of police and fire. And that's what I think the way of the future is. So we just need to commit and invest, because every city is going to be there in 20 years.
Well, Lisa, Andrew, and Chad, it's great talking with you. It's really nice to know that people like you, and actually people that are you, are running for city council. Things are really, feels like there's a change in the air here in Portland. So thanks very much for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having us.
And you've been listening to Running on Air, produced at KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. I've been here with Chad Likens, Lisa Friedman, and Andra Voltavine. These are all candidates from District 4. You can find all of the episodes of Running on Air on the KBOO website. That's kboo.fm/runningonair. Episodes are also available wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you to all the KBOO volunteers who helped to make this happen. Our engineers are Bob Davis and Althea Billings. Our producer is Althea Billings, and our editor is Eric Leuschner. Tune into the next episode of Running on Air. It's going to be next Monday, I think. It's not going to be. Okay, forget it. I'll find out more about that later. Anyway, and it'll be candidates from, we'll be going back to District 1. We're doing District 1 on Mondays, District 2 on Tuesdays, District 3 on Wednesdays, and District 4 on Thursdays. I'm Barbara Bernstein. Thanks for listening.
Sylvester the Boogie Cat, meow, meow. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM Community Radio.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Independence. Not being subject to another's authority or jurisdiction. Grassroots. The common or ordinary people. KBOO. A community radio station that supports both. Join us in our mission to push the status quo by becoming a member today. Go to kboo.fm/give between now and September 21st to donate and help us reach our $30,000 fall membership drive goal to wake up the neighborhood.
I'm Mr. KBOO.fm. Them should know it's accurate. Kabaka Pyramid say watch your step, you know what I mean?
Hi, you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, and this is Life Stamps, stories from here and there. I'm Joseph.
I am Tyson.
Join us every other Thursday at 10 a.m. as we discuss exciting destinations around the world. They're not always from personal experience, but never without cultural awareness and a passion for travel.
Welcome this week, Life Stamps, stories from here and there.
Hey, everyone.
Here's Joseph.
This is Joseph. How's it going, Tyson?
It's going good. That music, you know, in the beginning, it's making me feel like I'm going on an adventure. Where are we going?
This week, we are going to Cyprus.
Oh, okay. Mediterranean island.
Yeah.
Kind of European, kind of Middle Eastern, right?
Yeah. So Cyprus is interesting because it's part of the EU.
Okay.
So they use the euro, It's part of the Eurozone, but they're not in the Schengen zone. So it is separate immigration when you're going in and out of the country.
Oh, okay, so you stamp out and stamp back in.
Like correct.
If you were staying in Schengen, I presume.
Correct, correct, yeah. So Cyprus is an island in the Eastern Mediterranean, and it is 3,572 square miles, or 9,251 square kilometers. So to compare, the Portland metro area is 6,684 square miles.
So it's not very big at all then. It's only like a third bigger than the Portland area?
About half, yeah. About half the size of the Portland area. And that's the entire country.
You mean a half more bigger than Portland?
No. Cyprus is about half the size of the Portland metro area.
Seriously?
Yeah.
That's the whole country?
That's the whole country.
Oh, wow.
So I'm not talking about just Portland, but like Portland, Vancouver, Hillsborough, you know, like all of
those.
I know.
Yeah. I know, but I definitely thought it was bigger than that. I actually thought it would take a day to go from like the furthest east or west part of it or something.
No, yeah. So it's super small. Okay. Small island country. And also to compare, so around 923,000 people live in Cyprus.
Okay.
So, population density, it's about the same population density as the Portland area.
Right.
So, yeah, so it's interesting to have that comparison, because it's like, okay, it's its own country, has, you know, a rich, long history, but it's very small.
Right.
And, less than a million people live there.
So I imagine it's all the same climate then. There's no microclimates within an island that small.
Right. Yeah, I would expect it to be all Mediterranean climate.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Characterized by warm, hot summers, dry summers, and cool, wet winters. Maybe.
Yeah.
Cooler winters. I don't know about wet.
Yeah.
It probably gets some rain, though.
I think it probably gets some rain.
Yeah.
I mean, it's other Mediterranean places I know, like Turkey and other things like this, do have wet winters.
Speaking of Turkey, that's interesting because the official languages are Greek and Turkish.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. So there's, I think it's majority Greek, but there's a sizable Turkish minority.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So the island was just out there in the Mediterranean, and I imagine one of the first explorers would have then been either like Turkish explorers or Greek explorers that founded the island?
Yeah, so I mean, we can get into that, but the main thing is, yeah, specifically, I want to talk about the beaches of Cyprus.
Oh yeah, you know, our new co-host, Harvey, I bet you would love going swimming in a place like Cyprus, wouldn't you?
No, my programming does not allow me to agree.
All right then, Harvey, you tell us anything about Cyprus, at least?
Cyprus? Yes, let me compute. Okay, I have some information for you. Are you ready?
Yes, Harvey.
The history of beaches in Cyprus is a rich and diverse one, spanning thousands of years. Here's a brief overview. During ancient times, from 10,000 BCE to 330 BCE, Cyprus's strategic location made it an important hub for trade and commerce, with beaches serving as landing points for merchants and travelers. The ancient Greeks, Phoenicians, and Assyrians all established settlements and trading posts along Cyprus's coastline, utilizing the beaches for fishing, shipping, and commerce. Then there was the Roman and Byzantine era, from 330 BCE to 1191 CE. During the Roman period, Cyprus's beaches became popular resorts for wealthy Romans who built villas and temples along the coast. Even ancient humans liked beach resorts. The Byzantine Empire later ruled Cyprus, and the beaches continued to play a vital role in the island's economy and culture. Many of Cyprus's beaches were dedicated to ancient gods and goddesses, such as Aphrodite, who was said to have risen from the sea at Paphos, which is a city on the western coast of the island. That is quite the opposite from my origin story. I was built in a factory in Shenzhen.
Thank you, Harvey. That's great. Fascinating about your birth as well. So thank you very much, Harvey, and yeah, talk to you a little bit later today.
Yeah. That was a great little ancient history of Cyprus, the beaches of Cyprus. So that's kind of what I wanted to focus specifically on, the beaches, because that's sort of, you know, Cyprus being an island in the Mediterranean had a really important location and had a lot of, you know, trade and stuff. So there's a lot of important significance of the beaches, not just as like a party spot or like a place to go to hang out. And of course you can do all of that because the beaches are beautiful. They've always been known for being beautiful. As you know, as Harvey was talking about, the ancient Romans were, you know, there.
I mean, if Aphrodite came from the waters of that place, then it's got to be one of the most beautiful places on earth, I imagine.
It's true. Right. Right.
And so, yeah. Any other Greek mythology that's tied in with like Cyprus, the beaches or the ocean or anything like that?
I do have some things.
Okay.
We're just going through my notes here. For Aphrodite, the beach that is like said where she, that was the birthplace of her, is called, it's called Aphrodite's Rock, also known as Petra to Romeo, which is Rock of the Roman.
Okay.
So it's either, it can be like Rock of the Roman, also known as Rock of the Greek, and also known as Aphrodite's Rock. But it's said that's the combination of the beauty of the area. And then it's a popular place because it's so beautiful, and also because it's like the so-called birthplace of Aphrodite.
So are there cliffs as well, or is it just kind of beaches and then there's like some rocks and stuff, like in terms of what are all the different coasts like the north, south, east, west of the island?
So there are some, I think around like Aphrodite's Rock that you will find some cliffs and some rocks and things like that. I think a lot of the coastline is sort of flat beaches. Maybe with some cliffs here and there, but I do want to talk about some of the other beaches. So there was that one, and then there's also so a lot of these three beaches I'm going to talk about are in Paphos. I think Paphos was kind of an important place in ancient times for Cyprus. So Kato Paphos Beach is an ancient harbor and beach area with the famous called Paphos mosaics, and these are like a lot of Roman houses had like big mosaic floors. In their houses. Yeah. And so I think what's like popular, like what's great about this place is that they're kind of preserved. Can go visit, there's four houses, the House of Dionysus, the House of Aeon, the House of Theseus, and the House of Orpheus. And they all have very superbly preserved mosaic floors. Especially there's one that's called the Orpheus Mosaic, which I guess you could find that a lot in throughout the Roman Empire. Normally like in large Roman villas, but this scene was, it showed like Orpheus playing his, lyre.
I think the instrument's a lyre.
Lyre. Yeah.
It's like a lute.
Every time I say that word, I'm like, my brain kind of like shuts off a little bit. I'm like, how do you say that?
Right.
So he's playing his lyre, attracting birds and animals and many species to gather around him. So I guess this is a very like greatly preserved like example of that artistic depiction. That's really interesting. And then there's the Tombs of the Kings Beach, also in Paphos, and this is a beach near an ancient burial site dating back to the 4th century BCE. It's just, you know, it's just interesting because all of these, it's like, you know, you can go there to enjoy the beach a little bit, but then it's like all this cool historical stuff.
Right.
Like ancient history
and
is there.
And the tombs and everything.
The tombs and the stuff. Villas and all of that, yeah.
And these are Roman tombs?
Yeah, so this is right before, you know, medieval times. And so then that comes with its own history.
So these tombs are supposed of like the tombs of Caesars then, right? From Roman Caesars or... Or these like Byzantine?
Oh, so Tombs of the King dates from the 2nd century BC until the 2nd century AD. So it's like, it's some Roman, but I think it's a mix of, like, I think even like some Egyptian pharaohs were buried there.
Oh, okay.
And different emperors or kings from different places were buried there. So I couldn't find like anything specifically that like stood out to me in terms of like who was buried there, but it was, you know, a lot of like important, like higher class, like people from like the upper echelon of society back then.
Right. Were buried there. Roman society, mm-hmm. upper Egyptian society.
Right. And I think it's sort of like the stretch of the Roman Empire. So yeah. Like everywhere that the Roman Empire kind of,
I forget what Harvey said. I think he also said, the one that begins with an A. Armenian or what, another ancient culture society stemming from the Middle East. Not Sumerian, but the one that begins with an A.
Abyssian, maybe?
Abyssian, perhaps, yeah. So.
Well, yes, I would have to agree with that.
All right. I remember what Harvey says sometimes, but not always.
Looks like he agrees. Thanks, Harvey.
Yeah.
So Harvey, would you, so, you know, we've been talking about like the, you know, the sort of ancient history. Could you tell us a little bit more about like the, you know, medieval times onto the modern times?
During the Middle Ages, from 1191 to 1571, Cyprus's beaches were often used as landing points for crusaders and other military forces. The island's coastline was also vulnerable to pirate attacks, leading to the construction of fortifications and watchtowers along the beaches. Shall I go on? Yes, I shall. The Ottomans ruled Cyprus from 1571 to 1878. During this time, the island's beaches were largely neglected, and the island's economy declined. However, the beaches continued to be used by local fishermen and villagers who maintained traditional fishing practices and coastal settlements. Perhaps they were hanging on to some hope of revitalization. During British rule from 1878 to 1960, Cyprus's beaches began to develop as tourist destinations, particularly in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. The British built hotels, resorts, and infrastructure to support the growing tourism industry, focusing on beaches like Hagia Napa and Paphos. I suppose the British shared a common love for beach resorts with the Romans. In recent years, Cyprus has focused on sustainable tourism practices, protecting its beaches and marine environment while promoting ecotourism and responsible travel. I hope you liked my brief history of Cyprus's beaches. I will go back to sleep now.
Thank you again, Harvey.
Yeah, thanks, Harvey.
When robots snore, it's strange. But anyways, I'll never get used to that sound.
Is that him snoring?
No, that's the end of the program. Every time we, you know.
Every time he shuts down.
Every time we load the program and then his program ends, it just has like an, it just, so it doesn't keep looking for information. It's just like geolocating with your phone or anything.
I see.
Yeah, that's what Harvey does. But his snoring.
I'm still getting to know him, you know.
Yeah, I know. But you'll get used to them eventually.
Right.
It's a work in progress.
We're all getting used to Harvey, the historian.
Yeah. If you're just joining us right now, we are on KBOO 90.7 FM, and we are talking about beaches in the country of Cyprus. But what I like that he brought up, he was talking about that area of during Ottoman rule and then how like there wasn't a lot of tourism, but there was a lot of fishing. Mm-hmm. Can you elaborate on like the fishing industry in Cyprus and the traditions or the type of seafood that people eat?
I think that just in general, fishing has always had a strong tradition on Cyprus being in the Mediterranean. So it's been something that's been around for a long time. But as far as, you know, the seafood and stuff, I think it's, you know, a lot of what you can get in the Mediterranean. So a lot of, different kinds of fish, I think like sea bass is popular, in a lot of different foods. There's also another kind of fish.
What about squid or octopus?
Yeah. So those are also very popular as well.
Just like it is in Greece. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So I think a lot of the same seafood type dishes you're going to find like that. Maybe you would find in Greek food. You would also find, in Cyprus food, Cypriot food.
Cypriot.
Cypriot actually is the Cypriot. How you say it. Yeah. I think the thing that I found interesting about the food is that there's sort of like local, there might be like local variations, but it's all kind of like that Mediterranean kind of Greek. You know, they might have like stuffed type, you know, like how, you know, like the stuffed grape leaves or something, like they're the kind
sure,
of
sausage, the dolmas.
Like, dolmas and stuff. Yeah. This is actually quite different cause it's made of meat, but it's like slow cooked, lamb that's it's very different from dolmas, but it's sort of like the spiced lamb that's marinated in herbs and garlic and lemon juice and then sealed in like parchment paper to retain the moisture, and I you know cooked
like that, like, or in tin foil.
Oh, okay.
Moussaka, I'm sure you've heard of moussaka.
Sure.
With eggplant, lamb, souvlaki, but...
what about any Turkish food that's made it there?
Turkish food? I'm not really sure which foods are going to be, like, the... Turkish influences, but I think, like, is the honey, what are the honey, it's like the, that dessert, it's like
the pastry,
the pastry, the, what's that called?
You're talking about the baklava?
Baklava.
Yeah, baklava.
Is that, that's Greek, right?
Well, that's, or it's an origin pastry, mm-hmm. so you can find it even in Serbia and Bosnia, you can find it in Greece, and I know you can find it in Turkey, and you can find it in lots of places in the Middle Eastern world mm-hmm. as well, you know, and that's generally phyllo dough pastries or whatever, and things of this nature,
mm-hmm.
pistachios or walnuts, and rose water and honey are... cardamom are all kind of common flavors
mm-hmm.
and stuff in terms of desserts. I think you see a lot more coriander and nutmeg, cinnamon, and stuff like this for savory stuff.
Mm-hmm. I see.
But yeah, just kind of curious if any Turkish food was like, I'm sure there is Turkish food in Cyprus because of its history, but
I think there's probably some influence. And I think that, like, I found a lot of it to be like very kind of similar, just like that general Mediterranean type of food. So like, spiced meats, olives, and you know, like lots of herbs, fresh vegetables, tomatoes, and then, yeah, as far as seafood, like a lot of fresh fish, prawns, calamari, oysters, octopus. So like, again, that kind of what you kind of expect for Mediterranean type food.
Right.
So yeah.
Oh, okay.
But the, so some of the other stuff I wanted to talk about, in terms of like the beaches, well, I wanted to actually get into a little bit of like how to get to Cyprus, where to stay, you know, all of that kind of right. the logistics. So the main airport is Larnaca International Airport.
Okay.
So Larnaca is about 14, sorry, not 14. It's about 40 kilometers away from the capital, Nicosia.
Okay.
So you can take a flight. So the most popular route from the U.S. is to go from JFK in New York to Larnaca International Airport. So there's a direct flight.
There's a direct flight all the way to the island.
Yeah.
What airline does that?
Turkish Airlines? That's a great question.
Is it like a Greek airline?
Finnair, British Airways.
Oh, okay.
That goes from... they fly from Orlando to so you can also go from Orlando to
nonstop.
Cyprus, yeah, nonstop.
Nice.
On Finnair and British Airways, and then there's other airports that you can fly into. So there's the Erkan Airport, which is 12.8 kilometers away from the capital, and then you can also go to Paphos Airport, which is 95 kilometers away from the capital.
Okay.
But the capital itself might not be like your main destination, because it's more of more of a business city. It's not so much. It's not so much like a cultural destination as much as like some of the other places. It's going to be more modern, newer buildings,
right.
Stuff like that. You can also get to Cyprus by train and ferry. So let's say you were traveling from the UK, you could take a train from London to Istanbul, and then from Istanbul to Karaman, and then you take a ferry from there.
Oh, okay.
So, so train and ferry is
what
also
about,
possible.
What about Antalya? Do you know?
I don't know.
That's also like a coastal town and a bigger...
Anatolia?
Yeah.
Mm.
Antalya in Turkey.
Antalya.
Yeah, that's also on the coast that I think has a fairly good ferry presence, ferry harbor there.
It's possible, so, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe you could take it. But yeah, it is possible to take. So if you're thinking about doing Turkey and then coming into Cyprus, it's possible to take a ferry.
Yeah. What about Athens?
I don't think so, because I think it's a little farther away from Greece.
Right. Okay.
So yeah, like it's quite close to Turkey, internally for the distance, but I think it would be a longer ferry ride to go from Athens, or to go from Greece to Cyprus.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So I think if you're coming from Athens, you might as well just fly, I guess. Yeah. But it'd be interesting actually to check that out, because if there's even like a cruise ship that you could take
right.
from Athens to Cyprus, like that might be an interesting trip.
Yeah, I think so. That'd be a really long travel through the Mediterranean all the way out there.
Right.
And stuff.
And then as far as like staying in Cyprus,
yeah.
are you curious to know?
Kind of. I was just going to pitch a tent, but...
Oh, yeah. Well, you can do that. There's camping resorts.
If you insist on that I spend my euros and take a hotel room, I will.
Well, that's the thing is you can do anything from camping to staying in a luxury hotel.
Okay.
So if you wanted to camp, you could. So, yeah, you can find luxury hotels, beachside villas, camping resorts, house rentals, all of that. So there's not, like, specifically... you know, like I wouldn't recommend doing this over that. It's sort of just what experience you want. You know, do you want it to be like more luxury hotel style? Do you want it to be more rugged camping? Do you want to stay in a hostel? Do you want to stay in a villa? So it's, you know, you can kind of choose between all these different types of accommodations because the tourist industry there is very well developed. So they have lots of different travel experiences, I guess. And then as far as cities,
mm-hmm.
do you have any questions about any of that or?
Oh, well, no. Just is there any type of unique type of accommodation you can do specific to Cyprus?
Well, I think the thing that stuck out to me was the villas, the beachside villas.
Okay. What's unique about those?
Well.
Are they just like your regular like thatch huts on the beaches, overwater bungalows? Like what's unique about the villas in Cyprus?
I don't know if there's anything like specifically unique about them, but I'm guessing like I'm imagining that it would be something kind of old.
Okay.
Like maybe you could stay like in an older house or something or
right.
That kind of thing, but yeah, I think it depends on like where you want to like what kind of place you want to stay at.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Which place you have a higher chance of like seeing a god or a goddess?
Yeah.
In your dreams.
So then I would suggest staying near Paphos, maybe even camping
okay.
near Paphos, you know, and maybe you'll see Aphrodite in your dreams or something.
I did peyote in Paphos. Yeah, it was a long day on the road.
Ooh, yeah.
When I did peyote in Paphos, Aphrodite came to sing to me.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Cool.
That's cool. That's fun.
Uh-huh.
What else can you say about Cyprus beach life or beach trekking?
Yeah. So also like what I was saying about your experience is that the different cities kind of have their own vibe.
Right.
So like I already mentioned Nicosia, which is more like a business city, newer buildings, towers, stuff like that. So there's also Limassol. So Limassol has like, if you're more into like nightlife, partying and everything, it has a good nightlife and party vibe. And you can do kind of more luxurious type things and more simple things, has lots of beautiful beaches, lots of daytime activities and, you know, like that has a nice marina, but there's a lot of tourists there. I mean, I think there's a lot of tourists all over the country,
but there's clubs and stuff to listen to some good music.
Yeah, so I think a lot of like where you might find that is in Larnaca.
Okay.
So in Larnaca actually gets kind of wild during the summertime, so that I think is the like gets a lot of tourists and a lot of young people go there for the nightlife and the beaches. But the beaches there are really nice, like Finicotis Beach, Mackenzie Beach, Castella Beach, and then there's Pharos Beach. So all those kind of have a different vibe. Finicotis is more like has pubs, more like, you know, good nice atmosphere. Mackenzie's more family oriented beach. It's near the airport.
How much does a hostel generally run you a night here in Cyprus?
That's a really good question. I actually didn't find that information.
You didn't know? You didn't look?
No, sorry. I can look it up right now.
Which is why I'll do peyote looking for Aphrodite because I can't afford to stay here.
Right. I mean, if you're like, that's just the kind of vibe that you want to go for, right?
Brokenhearted in pathos, then Aphrodite comes to me.
So just a quick search. I'm seeing around like $40.
Okay.
For average. A hostel in Cyprus. Yeah.
Okay.
Doable. So, yeah, I think, certain things might be, I wouldn't expect it to be, cause it's like very touristy and it's also like they use the euro. So I wouldn't expect it to be like relatively, I wouldn't expect it to be too cheap, I guess.
Is this the most furthest east European country then?
I guess so, because it's really near Turkey.
Right, so, it's closer to Turkey and Syria.
Yeah.
Out there in the Mediterranean from the way I understand it.
I would think that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then there's Paphos. So Paphos is not going to be as developed as the other cities, which can be a good thing because it's more like nature.
Right.
So if you want more of like a nature vibe, less partying, more quiet, it's a really great place to go to, and there's lots of like monuments to visit. So this is where you're going to find Aphrodite's Rock, the Adonis Baths, the Petra to Romeo, which I think is similar, the same thing as Aphrodite's Rock. Anyway, and then there's camping resorts here as well. Lots of nature paths to walk through nature and stuff. So this is like a good option if it's like you want more of the nature-y vibe, more, you know, sightseeing,
right.
And you don't really care for, you know, going out at night or anything like that.
Sure. Is there any wildlife?
Yeah, like, lots of wildlife.
What you got?
Well, you can see like some great birds.
What else?
is that a bird?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You don't know what I, yeah, I think there's a bird in here.
Strange.
I know, right? Crazy.
We got to fix the holes in the vents of the roof of this place.
Right? I know.
Birds just fly in.
Yeah, lots of birds. Maybe like, oh, there it is again.
I can't hear it.
It's just, you know, it's around.
Okay.
Yeah, reptiles, amphibians.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you got the lizards, like island lizards, little snakes, and
mm-hmm. Cyprus whip snake.
Okay, is that is that an ocean snake or?
It's a non-venomous snake. It's a climber, so it's I think you find it more in the mountains.
Oh, what's the highest elevation on the island?
Really asking all the hard-hitting questions today.
But there's mountains. Is that what they say? They say there's mountains on the island of Cyprus?
Or it's hilly or something. Yeah. Let's see. The highest elevation of Cyprus?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, let me tell you about this snake.
Right.
So.
The Cyprus mountain snake, if yeah. there are mountains.
Mm-hmm. So this snake, the Cyprus whip snake, is a species of snake that likes Mediterranean type shrubby vegetation. Also, its natural habitats are temperate forests and freshwater marshes, stuff like that.
So. Pretty lowland stuff then, I think, in terms of like what it feeds on and what it eats and things of that nature.
So the highest elevation on Cyprus is Mount Olympus, 6,404 feet.
Okay.
So about 2,000 meters.
That doesn't sound very original. Isn't Mount Olympus in Greece?
Yeah, it's also known as Mount Troodos.
Okay.
Troodos. Yeah. So Cyprus is made up of two mountain ranges.
Okay.
And then the coastal lowlands. And then there's a plain, a semi-arid plain. So it does kind of have these maybe sort of microclimates in a way.
Right. I'm thinking 6,000 feet elevation is kind of like zigzag Oregon here, where you're not quite all the way up in Mount Hood, but you're like halfway there.
Yeah, about halfway.
Yeah.
I would say.
Yeah. So it's slightly mountainous. That's mountainous for an island, though.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
Especially a small island like that.
Yeah. What about, you know of any four-legged creatures then that exist on the island? Deer or bobcats or anything like that, since there is a higher elevation?
Chameleons.
Okay.
They have four legs, right?
Chameleons all the way up in the higher elevation? Yeah, maybe.
Persian deer.
Oh, okay. So they got little deer and
fallow deer.
Things and stuff.
Hares.
Okay.
Hedgehog, long-eared hedgehog.
I imagine all these ancient Romans just hunted these things and, you know, kind of cooked them on their fires.
Yeah, maybe. That's possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's that about the mammals and stuff.
So I also realized that Harvey was talking about eco travel in Cyprus and stuff is like the new like coming of things. So they're trying to preserve waters and oceans and stuff there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, can you elaborate more on some like the activities that one can do at these beaches?
Yeah, well, so in Cyprus, just it's, you know, as a place, there's different protected areas. So a really popular one is Cape Greco National Forest Park near Aya Napa. And you remember Harvey was mentioning Aya Napa.
Right.
So this is a protected area the Cretan ibex. That's another animal that you might see.
What is that?
An ibex is a...
It's a fox?
It's like a deer type, a wild goat. Sorry, not deer. So it has like big horns that go all the way back.
Oh, okay. But it's very skinny kind of creature.
Not too skinny, but okay. not fat. But, you know, it's. I think it's like a pretty kind of sturdy goat. Okay. Type of animal, but yeah, it's like, I think you've definitely seen pictures of this. It's like it has the two horns that go all the way back, kind of like go up and back.
I think so, yeah.
I think, you know, you might see it on like some, I don't know, logos or something,
right?
So yeah, that's
kind of like ram horns, but more elongated,
right? So that's what you'll see. Yeah, kind of like a ram, but just very.
Right.
Big.
That yeah. Goes,
yeah.
Yeah.
Big loop. So the Cape Greco National Forest Park is located on the southeastern part of the island, in Aya Napa, like I said. And it's just stunning place to go hike, has lots of different activities and just lots of great scenery. So there you can take like a 12-kilometer trail, where you can see views of the coastline, forests, surrounding landscape. So really, really cool. There's other trails that you can take. So around the island, the Lefka Beach Trail. At Lefka Beach is a 4-kilometer trail leading to a secluded beach with crystal clear waters. And then there's also Aphrodite's Grotto Trail, which you can go see some ancient ruins and stuff like that. Cool. So different kind of hiking opportunities.
Are there any waterfalls on the island or on these trails?
Not that I've seen. I could imagine there might be some, but I didn't see anything about waterfalls.
Nothing about waterfalls.
But you know, there could be some running water coming down. It depends, you know, if there's any reservoirs or anything up in the mountains.
Sure, sure.
And then there's also some like secluded beaches you can go visit that maybe are more away from the beaten path.
Right, but there's not going to be any type of villas or anything on those places to stay. You'd probably just do that as a day trip.
Yeah, so you'd go visit these, hiking, you know, there, pack in, pack it in, pack it out kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah, and so you can go to Lefka Beach, which I mentioned. It's like a pebbly beach with calm waters, and it's great for just like swimming and relaxation. And then there's Konos Bay Beach, which is more of it's like very picturesque with clear waters, and you can go snorkeling there, and also just sunbathing. And then there's Cape Greco Beach.
Do you know what the main species is that they're trying to preserve right now with like the eco developments?
I think it's more of just like habitat in general. So just like, okay. You know, the island in general, not making sure the island doesn't become like too overly developed.
Right.
So it's probably just like concentrating the development in certain areas and then, you know, preserving the rest of the island is, just to preserve the habitat. Because, you know, you got to think it's a small island.
Right.
So there's right. Lots of, if they wanted to, they could just build over the whole thing. Right. So,
yeah. No. And fortunately, that's good that they're in the EU so that the actual, maybe the parliament gets to kind of decide some of that as well.
Mm hmm. So you can also do some water sports like snorkeling and scuba diving to go see some of the marine life. Kayaking, paddleboarding is also something you can do. You can rent those things and then do it along the coastline. And then There's some guided boat tours that you can do.
Has Cyprus ever had any kind of natural phenomenon in its history, like Pompeii and the volcano or anything of that nature? Is it all kind of still intact from, like, you know, ancient Greece and Roman era, other than time itself?
Yeah, I didn't see anything about any kind of, you know, volcanic eruption or anything like that really disrupted. I'm sure that maybe, I don't know if the mountain there is volcanic, is active.
Right.
That's actually a really good question, but I didn't see anything about that being like a significant part of the history.
So there's no ruins in the Mediterranean near Cyprus. It's all just like on the island itself. Like there's no underwater ruins.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, you all know that for sure.
But yeah. I think a lot of the ancient ruins, because you can go see a lot of the ancient ruins on the island.
Right.
So I think a lot of stuff was built, you know, like on the island as it is.
Okay. And yeah. They never had like a natural disaster.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Right. So you were talking about food earlier, and I was like, oh, food, what food? You know.
Yeah. Well, you said you could only come up with like Greek varieties, but not too many Turkish varieties.
Right. So I just I have a whole section of my notes that's about food.
Oh, okay.
That I just forgot that I made. So,
did you have too much ouzo before you started this episode?
You know, ouzo is something that you can drink, actually.
I would believe it.
Yeah. So for those who are don't know about ouzo, that's a strong anise flavored spirit. That's it's normally enjoyed as an aperitif or a digestif. Cyprian wine is also very popular. So Cyprus produces a range of wines, and there's a famous Commandaria dessert wine.
Mm.
So that, you know, have that after your meal. Coffee is also apparently there's a lot of cafes in Cyprus cities.
Right, but they're importing, right? They don't have like coffee farms.
Right, coffee culture there is very strong. We have a strong traditional coffee is just part of like Cypriot culture.
If you're just joining us right now, we are on KBOO 90.7 FM, and we are talking about beaches in the country of Cyprus out in the Mediterranean. And right now we're covering different types of food that can be consumed. So thank you, and here we go.
All right. And like I mentioned, octopus. So grilled octopus is something that they have there. Seafood souvlaki, so skewers of marinated seafood, is also popular.
Oh, yeah. It's quite common, with the squid and the octopus and mm-hmm. other things like this.
Yeah, and then just fresh fish. So lots of fish and calamari, lobster is just, you know, they put that in a lot of different things. Grilled halloumi,
that's like the grillable cheese and mm-hmm. stuff. That's pretty tasty, you know, depending on the way if you throw it in like a pita sandwich or whatever with some fresh eggplant and roasted pepper.
Yeah, so stuff. Often served as like a side dish or an appetizer in Cyprus. And let's see, kebabs. I mean, we all know, we're all familiar with kebabs. Usually lamb, beef, or chicken. So kind of typical kebabs. Souvlaki, which I just mentioned, where it's like the skewers. The seafood skewers or meat skewers. Moussaka, which is an eggplant minced meat dish. And then there's kleftiko, which is a braised lamb in a flavorful broth. And it's served with roasted potatoes and vegetables. So it's a more hearty meal.
That's like a stew, like a lamb stew.
Kind of like a, it's a braised. Yeah, so kind of, it's served with roasted potatoes.
Okay.
So the roasted potatoes and vegetables, so it's just the lamb itself has been braised.
Okay, so it's just kind of juicy mm-hmm. lamb juicy potatoes. Lamb.
Yeah, exactly. Stifado, which is a hearty beef stew with onions, garlic, and sweet spicy sauce. And then, of course, gyros, which we're all familiar with.
Yeah.
The pita sandwiches. And then dessert, I was talking about this before, baklava.
Right.
But there's also, I'm going to try to say this, galaktoboureiko, which is a semolina custard pie in phyllo and then topped with a sweet syrup.
Okay.
And then lukomades, which is a deep fried dough balls drizzled with honey and sprinkled with cinnamon.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And then we talked about beverages. And then also if you want to go for the food, there's also some interesting markets and festival to check out. So you can go to, so in Nicosia, if you're staying there, you can go to their Old Town Market, which is, it has like fresh produce, cheeses, and traditional sweets. So you can go check out, you know, what are they selling at the local market.
Every day of the week?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, okay.
Might be closed one day, you know, if it's
religious holidays or anything of this.
Possibly, yeah. So, there's also the Larnaca. So if you're in Larnaca, you can go to the fish market, and you can get fresh seafood, fresh catches, of the day. So if you love seafood, that's the place to go to.
That's the place to go if you're doing an Airbnb there too, I imagine, you know, with like a whole like outside grill,
mm-hmm.
then it makes sense to buy your fish and just cook at home.
Right, exactly. Yeah, if you have that at your Airbnb for sure. Mm-hmm. And then there's also the Paphos Food Festival, which is it's just a celebration of Cypriot cuisine. So there's going to be like people doing cooking demonstrations, food stalls, live music. It's just a big cultural event to celebrate food from Cyprus.
So yeah, tell me something. Do you know more about the music? Is there any kind of cultural preservation going on with like traditional Cypriot music? You didn't mention the lyre as like a common instrument earlier.
Yeah. I don't really know much about like that specifically. I can imagine the music is going to be very, especially the modern music, you know, it's going to be more.
Well, modern music's modern music, but every country's got their folk music, you know, like I know like sort of like Greek folk music that plays something that's also like a small like kind of guitar kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's not a lute, it's not a lyre. They have their own name for the Greek one, but it's also somewhat like of a strummy little guitar kind of instrument and stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember the name of it now, but you can hear it sometimes in Portland at one of the Greek tavernas. But yeah, so
I didn't really look up much of the music in Cyprus, so yeah, I can't really speak to like, I could imagine it might be similar to, you know, like Greek or Turkish,
right,
you know, music. But yeah, as far as like instruments, I think I said like the lyre, and then also there's violin, lute is popular. So yeah, stuff like that. I think it's like pretty similar to what you might find like in Greek music.
Right, right. So you kind of got strumming and swaying with string instruments.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, lots of different kind of stringed instruments. Drums. There's the bouzouki.
The bouzouki, yeah.
That, you know that one?
That's the Greek guitar little thing, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a long-necked Greek mandolin with four pairs of strings.
Yep, yep. Mm-hmm. And it literally is about the size of a violin, but you don't play it with a bow. You just literally strum this little thing.
Right, exactly.
And stuff. So it's a pretty nice instrument,
and
actually.
And the santuri.
Don't know this one. Yeah.
So this is going to be, it has like two small hammers. It has like strings on it, and I think the strings are struck with the hammers,
kind of like a xylophone kind of thing.
I think so. But yeah, it kind of produces like a rich kind of sonic texture, so kind of like a xylophone,
but sure. More of like a reverberation instead of like a percussion instrument, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I think, you know, things like that. So, and then there's a Rockenspiel.
Like a glockenspiel, but rockin'.
It's a rockenspiel.
I mean, I don't know what that is either, but I do know what a glockenspiel is, but I don't know what a rockenspiel is.
Yeah, so it's like using stones to just kind of like, you know, make different sounds, because like stones will have different vibrations and
so
stuff.
You beat different stones with a mallet?
Kind
of like congos, but just with rocks.
I don't really understand this one as much, but yeah, something like that, I think.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, anyway, yeah, that's that. I think we have like 10 minutes left. You know, so this is interesting.
So we're going to have to debate something then. If we got 10 minutes left and you've told me everything, you know, I'll ask you today, you know, since I'm interviewing you, and you know, Harvey already told us everything he had to say. Isn't that right, Harvey?
Well, yes, I would have to agree with that.
Sorry, Harvey, didn't mean to wake you up from your nap.
No, my programming does not allow me to agree.
All right. Shut him off, Joseph.
I don't think he's very happy that you woke him up.
Well, no, because he's saying yes, no, like, I don't even know. Just send Harvey back to his quarters and right. Go back to, you know.
Well, Harvey's back to, yeah, Harvey's asleep.
Snoring, yeah. Like, you know, the circuits and his computer chips. So, so since Harvey's got nothing to ask, you know, I guess I'll just ask you some questions, you know, like, would you want to go to Cyprus?
Yeah, no, I would love to. It sounds like a really, like, I love when places have this sort of rich history, and I think that it's like a nice sort of, you can relax, but, you know, you get the sort of like beach experience, you know, like, you know, and then you can kind of choose. It seems like there's a lot of different things that you can choose. Like, you don't need to go there to party and stuff. You can also have like a more relaxing vacation.
I also didn't really ask you about how easy it is to get around on the island. So you just kind of sticking out your thumb and trying to hitchhike with people?
Buses? You can take buses around the island. So a lot of places are accessible by bus. I think you'd be walking a lot too.
Okay.
Because, you know, it's not a very big place.
Right.
And then you can...
Yeah, don't worry about that. That's just Harvey blinking.
Got it. Sorry, yeah. I got distracted by something in the studio.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think you can take buses. You'd be walking a lot for the hikes and stuff. You could also rent a car and then just, you know, drive around. And that might be the easiest way to get around because, you know, it's not that big, but maybe it's not that populated. So if you want to go to somewhere more secluded, renting a car could work.
Okay. Okay.
It's a very developed, you know, island.
Right. So would you just plan a couple nights in different places or whatever, or maybe just try to do it all in like 3 days and then couple it with like another trip in the region? Like if you were already like traveling in Turkey and then you would, you know, do your thing in Cyprus for about 3 nights or likewise,
I mean, if I were to stay
Egypt or something,
if I were to stay in Cyprus, I mean, it could be part of a longer Mediterranean trip where, you know, ending the trip in Cyprus, where you can kind of just relax.
Sure. Yeah.
But also if you wanted just to go there, you know, for me, I think I would want to stay in Paphos, cause it feels a little more relaxed, a little more laid back. And has more naturey stuff to do, and I think that it also has a lot of like the ancient ruins and things to see.
Right.
So I think I'd be really interested in that as far as like, you know, the historical aspect and everything.
Yeah, I would definitely be interested in, you know, checking out all the mythology, both from like, you know, the Greek history and the Egyptian history.
Yeah, for sure. And then I'd love to go down to the Cape Greco National Forest Park to do some, you know, more like hikes and check out like what's the local flora and fauna and all of that. So I think all of that sounds interesting as well. And then also finding some of these more secluded beaches sounds fun. I think it would be interesting for a day to do more of the touristy things, to be in the more popular places where there's more like nightlife and stuff. But I think eventually I would gravitate more towards the more like nature-y, you know, like more peaceful aspect of it.
Right, right. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds pretty wonderful and pretty exotic.
What about you, Tyson?
Yeah.
Like, what would your style of travel be if you went to Cyprus? Or would you want to go to Cyprus?
I mean, probably. You know, now that I know I could stay in a hostel for 40 euros a night, and it's like, you know, I don't have to just do peyote on the beach. I think I would probably go there.
Never mind. Sorry, I'm not going to say anything. Go ahead.
I guess what I'm curious about, though, is like sailing and stuff like this. I'd want to actually get out in the water and not just do the island activities and
totally.
Like, do some of the outrigging kind of things. I would love to hang out with, like, you know, local traditional fishermen that have generations and generations and generations of just doing this thing, catching this one kind of thing or whatever, and learn more about the ecology of that, you know, and like, you know, sponge fishermen, or whether it's like squid or, you know, octopi and things like this, and just their art of how they do that and just kind of what it means to.
Yeah, I mean, I think that could be totally interesting.
You know, so Yeah, I don't think I'd spend a lot of time in a place like this, but there's definitely a lot of culture and history that I would like to, you know, soak in with that and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like more somewhere where you'd slow down. Like if you're gonna stay there for a while, you know, you kind of take it slow and just lean into the relaxation part of it, because it's not gonna be like, okay, see the next thing, see the next thing, see the next thing, because then it's, you know, it's not a big place to explore. So, you know, right. you're going to run out of things to see pretty quickly. So then it's just like, if you want to stay there for longer, it's just more like leaning into that slower lifestyle.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like...
And going out on the boats.
Yeah, like, for example, like, you know, there's a tiny island off of Puerto Rico called Culebra Island and stuff. And that's where people go to see the bioluminescence and stuff. But almost,
oh, right on.
And it's technically considered the nicest beach out of any of the other beaches, even within Puerto Rico. So that makes it a really beautiful beach. But almost anybody I've ever talked to, they only go there for like 2 nights. Because mm-hmm. it's like they got the beach, they got the bioluminescence, and they got the trails. And then mm-hmm. after that, they're kind of like, well, why am I on this island?
Right, so, yeah. nothing else to see.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. So no matter how much it looks like paradise, we're all going to run back to the pollution eventually. Just right. Don't you forget that.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we're, you know, at some point we are a social species and we like to be around other people.
We like to be around our own trash.
Yeah, I guess so.
And our own, I don't know, destruction.
Yeah. You're so spicy today.
I'm not spicy.
Oh, you're being a little spicy.
I'm just my normal mix of...
My normal level of spiciness.
My normal mix of proper humanity
is
coming through in the airwaves today.
True. Mm-hmm. I think it's a really, you know, I've only like really touched the surface, just kind of scratched the surface in terms of, you know, Cypriot culture and history and everything.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes it such a cool place, that like through my research, I'm like, there's so much, you know, like this is a place that has been inhabited, you know, since before, like, you know, BCE times.
Right. Like, why is it not like, you know, Rio de Janeiro or something right now? Because it's like a beautiful island and it has beautiful history. And that's pretty cool that there's less than a million people that live there.
It like has kind of everything that you'd want. It's like a beautiful Mediterranean, you know, beautiful beaches. And then it has a beautiful, you know, like a rich history, delicious food. It's like everything is so nice. And I just think it would be like a really interesting, cool place to visit.
And it doesn't seem to have the celebrity takeover, you know. I think you can probably think that EU further regulations on that, you know. So it's not like Monaco or Marseille or, you know, anything else that's going to have celebrity takeover.
And then it's interesting because they're thinking about expanding or like becoming part of the Schengen zone.
Right.
Like that's, I think there might be a process in place right now to become part of the Schengen zone. And so like that could bring more tourists to it. And I'm wondering like, okay, maybe that might be good for the economy, but I'm wondering how that could impact, you know,
the culture, like, the culture and everything,
because if it's like, if you can travel freely between the EU and Cyprus, like how, like, will that bring, you know, will we get a situation that's like, is it Mallorca in Spain?
Mallorca,
yeah.
Right,
yeah. Where it's like, you know, they don't want, you know, tourists to be there anymore because it's kind of overrun.
Right, or Santorini, or Corsica, or...
Yeah.
You know.
So it would be interesting Sardinia. To see, because I think from what I... Like, it sounds like that it still gets a lot of tourists, so that, you know, there's still a lot of... But it also seems like you can find... it's, like, not so popular that, like, you know, you can also find more secluded areas.
Right.
So,
yeah, I mean, all these islands, you know, there's just like, it's harder and harder to find ones that are not like super blown up or super discovered, especially when it comes to the Mediterranean, I think.
Right. So. Well, I think we are out of time.
All right.
Yeah. So,
I guess we'll say Cyprus.
All right. Well, this has been Life Stamps. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Yep. See you in 2 weeks.
We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You have been listening to Life Stamps, stories from here and there on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. Join us in 2 weeks for our next episode. Until next time,
happy traveling!
This is Judy Berry from Earth First, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to non-commercial community radio, KBOO, Portland. No compromise in defense of the truth.
KBOO Community Radio couldn't do it without you. Support KBOO.